Hey guys, welcome to the podcast, Ghost Stories and Ghouls. Today we're going to be talking about Chupacabra, Bigfoot, Mothman, and Wendigo, all from North America. So, we're going to start off with Chupacabra. Chupacabra, also known as Goat Sucker, is a New Age monster, developing in 1995, which is not where most of our tales come from, it's a very recent one, in Puerto Rico in the town of Canova. So basically, animals started showing up with blood and holes in their neck, and the blood being... Why are you giving me that look, Greg?
Well, that's because that's creepy, man. Like, imagine you go out to the farm, you know, you're about to go milk your cows, and it's just covered in blood, and you're like, I...
Yeah, that's true, honestly. I mean, yeah, so basically the animals would, you know, the farmers would come out, find them on the ground with two holes in their neck, and all the blood drained out of them. There was a little bit of vampire speculation going throughout the area, but then... A couple reports of the Chupacabra came in. So basically, this animal in Puerto Rico, as it was depicted, is 3 to 5 feet tall with bat wings, hunched back, spine, quills, red eyes, and fangs. Pretty terrifying creature, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds like a little goblin.
Little goblin, but with like bat wings.
Bat wings?
Yeah, it's just terrifying.
Can it fly around?
I don't know. There were never any reports about it flying, but... Everybody to claim to have seen it said it had bat wings, so...
Yeah, is that all the information you have?
No.
Okay, I mean, there's still more?
Yes, about its physical appearance, that's all I have.
Okay,
but
yeah, because...
Just from the Puerto Rico region. There's more that we're going to discuss later, but this was the original theory.
Because the bat wings are interesting because I believe... Because this is prevalent in Mexico as well, correct?
Yes.
So I think there's a species of vampire bat in Mexico, so like... That's pretty interesting, because, like, you know, the bat wings and such, but, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. So, basically, the livestock were dying all around in Puerto Rico, and as the reports of the Chupacabra came in, so basically, the town of Canova was starting to get extraordinarily worried. They would have people up at night guarding their goats and escorting children to school. The whole town was just kind of in a widespread panic, and basically, people started to assume... that the Chupacabra was an escaped military experiment from Fort Buchanan, which is about 40 minutes up the road. So that is where the monster, quote-unquote, came from,
so
essentially.
So is that, like, Area 51, but, like...
Puerto Rico, Area 51.
Well, I guess we know where to raid next.
True. And so, yeah, basically, everybody was terrified, and by the start of 1996, 2,000 or more animals had been... killed by the Chupacabra. So, the mayor of Canova, who was up for re-election, actually drug a goat in a cage through the middle of the town with a crucifix in order to try to catch and kill the Chupacabra. It didn't work. It never came. But
so he just, like, took, a goat.
He put a goat in a cage and was just dragging it across the middle of the road. But it was like, yeah, that's cool. I mean, he's got some patriotism. I'll give it to him.
I mean, that's some effort. A for effort right there.
He loved interviews too. So he was getting interviews by Washington Post, New York Times as they were publishing all this widespread panic. And, you know, he was just like, yeah, I had a crucifix, had the goat. We was just vibing in the middle of the street. Yeah, so he's an interesting character. But he really spread the Chupacabra story throughout all of the United States and into North America, and it kind of became a pop culture icon. Like, t-shirts were starting to have Chupacabra printed on it. There were a couple songs with Chupacabra as like the main idea. It's pretty cool. And then basically the Puerto Rican government, because it was getting so widespread, started to get worried that it would affect tourism, so they basically sent like small platoons of military like reserves to deal with the monster. And after a while, the animals kind of just stopped dying and getting all their blood sucked. But then, basically, a couple years later, rumors started to surface of the same thing happening in Upper Mexico and Southern United States. So, these reports of the Chupacabra were different, however. The one in Puerto Rico was a bipedal bat, essentially. And the ones from Mexico was like a hairless, four-legged rabid creature. With, yeah, just like weird spine quills and glowing eyes and, you know, the whole shebang. So basically, people were terrified and there were tons of, you know, pictures that were surfacing of, oh, I caught the Chupacabra, but every time it turned out to be large raccoons what's the disease? Dogs with mange. There we go.
You know, have you seen A Quiet Place?
Mm.
Oh, bro. There's like this scene where like a raccoon just gets like crushed. And I just thought of that when you mentioned like them just killing raccoons and bring them in. Like, I caught the chupacabra.
No, they would do that with like, especially the mange dogs, because mange basically.
It's like rabies?
I mean, it's like a disease like that, but basically it causes all the dog's hair to fall off and it grow like extra thick skin. Ugh. So it was basically like a really spotty, hairy, like rabid dog running around. And they would claim it was a chupacabra and then get up close to it and realize they just like absolutely obliterated like a diseased dog. So yeah, so basically that was happening in New Mexico a couple years afterwards, and things kind of started to die down. There's obviously the chupacabra fanatics still running around with mange dogs. So yeah, that's basically the story of the chupacabra and kind of how it came to be from Puerto Rico and then traveling up into the United States, which is, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because I always thought that the chupacabra, like, originated in Mexico. I feel like that's, like...
It became more prevalent, I would say, in Mexico, and just because it went, you know, from northern Mexico to the southern United States, and, like, you know, when it kind of went really domestic, it kind of, like, sparked a big wildfire. I mean, it was having some big publicity from Puerto Rico and stuff, but, like, when it hit the U.S. and amidst the Puerto Rico, like, you know, having it all in newspapers and stuff coming into the United States, it just became this pop culture, like, icon almost.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Just because, like, I think, or I, maybe, there's, like, a species of vampire bat that lives in South America that that do similar things to, like, what you were describing.
Yeah.
They, like, feed off cattle and
stuff. During this time, there was an overpopulation of that vampire bat, so there was not enough food to go around, so they would have to resort to getting goats and cattle and other livestock. Yeah. So that is a very possible explanation to this, but, you know, it could easily be escaped military experiment from Fort Buchanan.
Yes. So what one of the urban legends that I found is it's pretty recent. A lot of North American urban legends are surprisingly recent, besides a few of the Native American or Indo-American ones.
Yeah, for sure.
The one that I'm going over right now is Mothman.
Oh, yeah.
And its first original sighting was on November 12th, 1966 in Clintonon, West Virginia. Five gravediggers claimed to see a large man with wings just, like, flying through the sky.
That's chill. I mean, I'd be chill if I saw that. Just, like,
yo, just a large dude just vibing out in the sky.
Yeah. I mean, you should kind of respect the grind, honestly.
Just be like, look at him go. Just, like, everyone starts clapping. You know, the crowd start wooing.
Like, no, like, fear at all. Just, like,
just look at that guy go.
That's cool.
He's really, really pushing past the humanity's limits, you know?
On God.
But the creature was first reportedly seen in the Point Pleasant area from November 13th, 1966 to December 15th, 1967. So it was like about a full year.
I got you.
And the first newspaper report was published in the Point Pleasant Register, dated November 16th, 1966, titled Couple See Man-Sized Bird Creature Something. And, there's actually a book and a movie called The Mothman Prophecies.
Bro, what? The Prophecies?
Yeah, The Mothman Prophecies. The book
pretty funny.
Was originally written. The book and the movie are pretty different, if I think. Because I know the book talks about more about the collapse of Silver Bridge,
mm-hmm.
which happened during the sightings of Mothman. A lot of people thought they saw him on Silver Bridge before it collapsed.
So are they attributing the collapsing of the bridge to his doings?
Yeah, to him. He could have caused it. Because I know 46 people died in the collapse of Silver Bridge.
Hmm.
And then the Mothman Prophecies is like UFOs. The
cool.
Movie.
Nice.
Yeah, the book is very different from the movie.
So how do you attribute, like, the Mothman and Silver Bridge? Like, did that make the Mothman more prevalent? Or was it just kind of something that happened at the same time where both were?
It just happened at the same time where, like, people, all these Mothman sightings started. And the first one in Point Pleasant was on November 15th, 1966,
mm-hmm.
Where two young couples from Point Pleasant, Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Millette, they were driving down by what's known as the TNT area, which is a former World War II munitions plant.
Munitions.
Moo.
Wow.
Which is basically where they just made bombs. And it was like a top secret thing in World War II. And they were driving past it, and they stop, and they see just a huge, like they say, like the accounts from the actual couples were, it was 6 to 7 feet tall.
Like Shaq.
Yeah, but this guy ain't playing basketball.
It's just Shaq. Shaq is Mothman.
Shaq is Mothman. We got this confirmed.
We figured it out. Podcast over.
But it had a wingspan they saw a wingspan of about 10 feet.
Oh my God.
So this is a big thing, and it had these big glowing red eyes. And that was like what caught the headlight. They saw it on the headlight because of its eyes.
Wow, that's terrifying.
And the first time it fled, and then they were driving down Route 62 shortly after because they saw it and they were like, we got to get out of here, man.
Yeah, I bet.
And they were driving down Route 66 and they turned and it's back and it's chasing their car. Oh, and they were going like around 100 miles per hour and it was like still keeping pace with the car.
Jesus Christ.
And they like
terrifying.
They were freaking out. But a lot of people at first were like, these people are crazy, but it's kind of like you would sound a lot crazier if it was just one guy.
Yeah.
But it was four people that all saw the
okay.
same.
Okay. Honestly, if I'm ever driving and I see a pair of glowing red eyes, I might poop myself and then immediately, like they did, drive away at like 150 miles an hour.
Just hit the gas, man.
And then, you know, you just suddenly turn around and it is there.
It's just
like,
back.
Oh my
you're
God,
like, oh God.
That's terrifying.
But some people use like different ways to explain what it could have been. Some people thought it was just like a sandhill crane, which is this large bird
with glowing red eyes.
It has like a red pattern around its eye that they thought it could have been. But the thing is that around the TNT area, there was a lot of pollution, a lot of like radioactive.
Oh, yeah. I was meaning to ask you about that. This radioactive.
Yes.
Radioactive World War II TNT chemicals seeping and creating monsters.
Yes. So they believe that it may have been a mutated sandhill crane.
That would be terrifying.
That would be yeah. Imagine just like a giant bird coming at you. It's like Big Bird, but like not friendly.
Do you know how big those sandhill cranes are, like normally?
They're like, I think 4 feet tall.
Okay.
They're cranes. So yeah. They're not like, they're big for birds, but like compared to me, like, I could fight that. I could fight that thing.
I could
like,
totally take a crane.
Yeah,
honestly.
I could take a crane on. Like, what's it gonna do? Beep. What is it? What is the? What noise did they make? They like coo.
Ah!
Yeah, something like that. And I could just like beat that thing into the ground. I do
True.
Not condone violence to birds. But anyway,
except if it's a radioactive crane.
If it's radioactive, go at it.
Then we here at Ghost Stories and Ghouls fully condone crane violence if it's radioactive.
But Mothman got his name because after the reports, like the descriptions, the enemy of Batman, Killer Moth.
Oh, yeah.
Was that
up-and-coming thing in the 60s in the
yeah,
comics?
Yeah, he was in the comics at that time. So they were like, oh, let's call this thing Mothman.
That's kind of cool. I know, like, I used to read the Batman comics and watch, like, the Batman cartoons as a kid, so that's actually so funny that it's related.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool how that ended up. But
yeah,
after December 15th, 1967, the collapse of Silver Bridge and the death of 46 people, that's when the sightings stopped. It was after Silver Bridge. Like, they just immediately dropped off. Like, there was a few scattered ones later. And apparently there was, like, sightings just, like, all over the place. According to Georgian newspaper, I can't pronounce it, I'm sorry. Russian UFOologists claimed that Mothman sightings in Moscow foreshadowed the 1999 Russian apartment bombings.
Huh.
So, like, he's kind of seen as, like, a forewarning or, like, a harbinger of, like, bad events.
Low key just got chills from that. I don't know why. That's, like, weird to me.
I mean, it's cool. I mean, he's, like...
It definitely is cool for sure, but, like, that's... I don't know. Personally, I'm a pretty big believer in, like, all that stuff. No, I definitely believe that.
I'm, like a skeptic, man. I don't...
You don't think any of it's real?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be like, that's kind of cool, but I wouldn't be like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
I'd
I'm like,
be like, all right.
Okay, the idea of Mothman is definitely, like, far-fetched, but, like, One thing I definitely believe in, ghosts.
Ghosts?
100%. I'm sold on ghosts. They are for sure real.
Yeah, we definitely got to do a haunting episode in the future. That'll be a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. Especially like all the scary like stories, first-hand accounts.
I can go through like my Guinness Ripley's, the Ripley's Believe It or Not books back from like Scholastic Book Fair in like third grade that I used to buy. No, so hype. But yeah, that's kind of interesting. So is he known kind of now as an international symbol of forewarning?
Apparently he was seen in Chicago before. I don't remember the event, but there was something. He was seen a few times in Chicago. Some people reported that they saw him in the smoke of 9/11. One seems pretty far-fetched.
A little bit.
Yeah, that's about all I have on Mathman. Mathman.
Oh, yeah. What was that like?
I hate math, bro, so much.
Nice. Good work. Honestly.
But facts. but it's just there's a Mothman is just like an interesting because it seems like so obscure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of urban legends are very obscure, but the sense of like how recent it is,
yeah,
it just seems a little bit more obscure.
I feel that.
But yeah, actually, Point Pleasant has a statue of Mothman.
Really?
Yes, they have a statue. Just because it's like a big tourist attraction in Point Pleasant. Mm. Like if you go and watch a Monstrums video on it on YouTube, they like go over there and they went to the TNT area and it's so creepy, dude.
Really?
It's like all abandoned. There's overgrown trees.
That's terrifying. They're a great YouTube source for this stuff. If y'all want, they provide the pictures where, you know, we can't hear on the podcast, but they're awesome. Y'all should go check them out.
Definitely check out Monstrum. That's a really good channel to watch if you're just interested in urban legends and mythology.
They got some pretty short, you know, 10 minute videos.
They're about 10 to 20 minutes. They're pretty short. It's actually, and they're filled with information too.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a couple pillars and like these large buildings and three of them have just like birds all in them, except for one. One of them is just empty at all times. And everyone everyone thought like Mothman lived in there.
Yeah.
That was like the thing. And that freaks me out, man. Dr. Zarga, who is the host of Monstrum, went in there and like there's spray paint all over the walls from people like, you know, spray painting like Mothman on it. And it's scary. Like the whole forest, it has like a whole different, like, cause like there's the forest vibe and then there's that particular forest vibe.
That's so strange. Okay. Some of like the auras of those places,
they're just freaky, man.
Yes. And like the fact that like whenever like animals do not go somewhere, I am not going in
place. You ain't messing with it, bro.
Yeah. I will. Like, if nature's trying to tell me something, I will gladly listen. Like I am not going anywhere where no other living thing will go. That is one of those places. I am not going to have to like go to that pillar.
Meanwhile, I see it. I'm like, I just gotta go in there, bro.
You're one of the guys that's just like go in there, like take a selfie. And
just like dies to whatever's in there. It's like, I'm like taking a video of myself. Check that. And you just see Mothman's arm just grab my throat and just drag me up.
That's chill. I'll just be like way over on the other side, like barely even looking.
You just got the binoculars. You're like, all right. Like,
oh, Greg's gone.
All right. There you go. So what are you going over next?
We're going to be talking about Bigfoot. Probably one of the most infamous urban legends in the United States, I would say.
Bigfoot?
That's so true. So, I mean, everybody knows Bigfoot. I've known about Bigfoot since I was, like, a little kid. It's just one of those things. And then you see, like, on the History Channel at 2 a.m.
Yes. I love History Channel, too. It's like Bigfoot,
crazy Bigfoot
is the president.
Sightings.
Yeah.
Or it's so funny. Just like, no, aliens didn't build the pyramids. It was actually the Mongoose.
You know what they say about men with big feet? beautiful joke.
No, continue.
you become an urban legend, man. That's what happens.
That's pretty good. So, basically, Bigfoot is often described as like a huge Sasquatch, kind of ape-like, big bipedal, just giant mound of thing.
So it's like basically the Yeti, sort of.
Yeah, except like Oregon brown. Forest brown Yeti. And so it's traced back to Oregon and Washington. where the original sightings came from, and also Northern California. So the Native American tribes that lived there actually had gods that were depicted like what people would think of Sasquatches as. And so those, as when they originally lived in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, like of that region, they had many like gods that were, you know, giant bipedal monkeys and stuff like that. And so basically when the settlers and pioneers came and took that over to get timber, the legend goes that the Native Americans put, you know, a quote-unquote curse on them to get revenge on them from taking their land. And so basically...
Makes sense.
Yeah. So the lumber people started reporting sightings of this massive Sasquatch-type creature that would just roam around the woods and stalk them. So they got out of there pretty quick, as most people would. I wouldn't want some massive 10-foot-tall animal just stalking me as I'm cutting down a tree. Like, it's pretty horrifying.
Maybe he just wants, like, a hug or something. You ever thought about that?
Nah.
Yeah, Bigfoot has feelings too, bro.
You know, well, that may be true. He can get those feelings from somebody else. I ain't going
to do that. Yeah, actually, Mothman has had, like, a curse that was, like, supposedly... like what, where he came from, but they go over this in Monstrum in the episode, but they went back and there was actually just like a play where they added that in there, and it like wasn't actually a thing. It was just like people heard that in the play and just like thought it was true.
Interesting. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like a thing with misinformation. I mean, like if you tell people a rumor, they're gonna believe it, especially if it's from like a long time ago.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah.
So basically, in 1958, in Bluff Creek in California, a series of large footprints were discovered in the mud that had hardened. And so the legend quickly spread throughout the press. The Humboldt Times were the first newspaper to pick it up, and then it just exploded. And people were coming in with reports from all over Oregon, Washington, and California that there were just these series of like large footprints, like size 20 shoe, basically, just... they'd have like five or six of them in deep mud, and then it'd go away. I mean, people would just, like, literally all over were these reports coming in. And so, basically, they would extract the footprints from the mud, send them to scientists, and the scientists did a lot of studies and figured out that it was a bipedal creature. All of them, suspiciously, were coming in. The scientists deducted, based off multiple footprints, that it had a slight limp in its left foot. Which is weird. So
that's like oddly it's like, it's kind of weird that they can figure that out though, just from the footsteps.
Yeah, just like from how deep the arch goes and stuff like that. Yeah, and like how much, you know, slant or whatever, like how much pressure was applied in certain areas. But yeah, so that's the creepy thing. And yeah, so basically in China, back like before the Ice Age, before the Ice Bridge, there was a species of ape that was about 10 feet tall, which is basically like the Sasquatch. And many people believe that was the origin of Bigfoot, and that they crossed over on the ice bridge during the Ice Age. And then there were very few of them left in the area, but they managed to keep their populations, you know, somewhat up. And now there's still a couple of them roaming around the lush forests today.
Yes. So, it's very similar to the Yeti, because when the Yeti was, because like, it's very common in Tibetan and other areas like that, and Nepal, that area. It's very prevalent in that, especially up, you know, by the Himalayas, where like most people know it from.
Yeah.
Where like they found footprints, and like that kind of led to a big craze. So yeah. When we go over the Yeti, we can definitely bring a lot of stuff and like similarities.
Absolutely.
Between the
two. And I mean, that the similarity, in my opinion, is those apes from China, because they could have migrated
down to the
mountains.
I think that was
a
theory that was about the Yeti, was it's that species of ape. But the thing is, I think in the original language the name comes from, the Yeti, it's like, I think it means like smelly bear. It means like something, it's like big and smelly.
Huh.
Pretty
accurate, I would imagine.
It probably smells bad, not going to lie.
Yeah.
Imagine. No deodorant. You just chilling?
No deodorant in the ice caves.
In
like
the ice caves, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, we'll definitely go over the Yeti in a later episode.
For sure, for sure. And then in 1967, with the there was a film that came out, the Patterson-Gilman film, that had the first quote-unquote sighting of Bigfoot. So while the video was never actually disproved to be a hoax, many people came forward and said, yeah, the Bigfoot in the video was just a costume, and I was the guy in the costume. The original creators of the video never said anything. They never admitted it was a hoax, but, like, different people from, weirdly, all over the United States came forward. So that could be just a 15 minutes of fame type thing.
Yeah, like, that just happens sometimes, especially, like, even if it's, like, a murderer, people will be like, it was me. But it's just like,
it was me, lol.
Yeah. They just call it, yeah, that was me, guys.
Yo, I just hope killed that whole family. Chill, though.
Easy dub.
Yeah. So all these people were coming forward saying that they were the guy in the costume in this film, and, you know, through research, it was never actually discovered to be a hoax.
You think after the first person say that, other people wouldn't, but that's where we're wrong, because they're just like, they just keep coming. They're like, it's...
No, I was Bigfoot. It was me.
It was me,
trust
bro.
Me, guys.
Bro, it was me.
For real. Yeah.
Sources, just trust me, bro.
Have I ever lied to you before? And so, yeah. So all those people stepped up. And then in the 70s, the FBI, wow. I don't know what happened there. Yeah, so the FBI put out the official Bigfoot document, which had scraps and clippings of newspapers from throughout the country and obviously the Patterson-Gilman film. But it really was not much, and people, like, as soon as it went out, like, went crazy for it. But then after they realized, hey, there's, like, five things in here, and I've seen them all before, they were like, oh, cool. So the government does not know that much more than us.
Didn't the government, like, recently release, like, UFO files?
Yeah.
And there was, like, five things in there, too, and everyone was like, okay, we've learned nothing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, are you done with Bigfoot?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
So, I still got a little more to talk about.
Bro, all right, bro.
Don't worry.
I'm just excited about my subject.
Cap.
It's so good. Mine is so good.
So, yeah, and then, you know, reports are still, and video clips are still coming in. There's the good old History Channel at 2 a.m. with Bigfoot sightings and all that. And then, yeah, so basically the daughter of the man who originally found the footprints, the daughter of his friend who originally found the footprints, they were, like, working together, and they were on a hike, basically, when they found the footprints, said that her dad, who was the guy who found his friend, put down the footprints with, like, a size 20 shoe and just, like, plopped them in the mud just to scare his coworker. But the thing is that throughout all of that area, it had been the slight limp of the left foot. Like, there was that consistency even among the fake footprints. So it's weird.
So, like, did he do more or did he just do those ones?
No, he just did one.
Interesting.
Yeah. He died like very shortly after that happened. And, like, there was footprints and stuff coming in from all over with that slight left foot limp.
That's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
All
right.
So, on to the next subject. So, the
Thank
Wendigo.
You, Greg, for your thoughts.
Yes, my beautiful thoughts, bro.
Absolutely glorious.
The Wendigo is a myth.
Yeah.
Bro. Is a creature or evil spirit from the folklore of the First Nations Algonquin tribes. So, just like the Algonquin area. Are you familiar with that?
Where?
Okay. It's like, the Algonquin tribes are based in the northern forests of the east coast of Canada and Great Lakes region of Canada and the United States. So kind of like northeastern United States and a little up above that.
I got you. So do they spread into, like, the main area, or are they more confided around the lakes? Do they not spread that far east?
They don't spread that far, but it's, like, a decent chunk. I mean, because there's a lot of Native American tribes.
Yeah.
And the Algonquin...
Were they a big tribe, or were they...
The Algonquin is made up of multiple, I believe.
Interesting.
I have some stuff written down. Okay, the Algonquin. The Algonquin. Algonquin is a language that was spoken by multiple tribes.
Oh, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So there's multiple specific tribes that spoke Algonquin.
Nice.
And the Wendigo is depicted as a monstrous, malevolent spirit with some characteristics of a human or as a spirit who has possessed a human being.
Oh.
Its influence is said to invoke acts of murder, unsustainable greed, cannibalism, and the cultural taboos against such behaviors.
That's probably something I'd have to put my beliefs in, being 100% honest.
It's frightening, dude. It's a scary looking thing. Because, like, a misconception about the Wendigo is that it's, like, the man with the deer head.
Mm.
That's
a common
misconception, but yeah, that's not accurate. But there's actually a medical condition called it's called Wendigo psychosis.
Interesting.
And its symptoms include intense craving for human flesh or fear of becoming a cannibal.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and in some indigenous communities, environmental destruction and unsustainable greed are also seen as a manifestation of a Wendigo or Wendigo psychosis.
That's terrifying.
The Wekuje, I believe is how you pronounce this. Nice. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. It's a similar being that appears in the legends of the Athabascan people of the Northwest Pacific Coast. It's also cannibalistic. It also just devours people.
Interesting.
However, it's characterized as enlightened with the ancestral insights.
Hmm.
So,
as in the ancestors are trying to tell us something, or are they displeased in how we're acting?
I think so. It's just the Wendigo is a part of the traditional belief system of the Algonquin peoples.
Is it like one of their gods? Or
no, it's just a creature. It's like it's normally associated with winter.
Huh.
Interesting enough, because that's when the most famine is and the starving.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that's when, like, because it's associated with greed and winter and hunger and starvation.
Do you have the origins of that? Because that sounds like it was a legend of someone went crazy and started eating, like, their comrades and essentially died and left their, like, tainted spirit.
So a lot of Native American stories, it's a very oral language.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really find one, and I didn't want to find one that just, like, wasn't actually one.
Yeah, for sure.
But the different Algonquin speaking tribes are the Ojibwe. Oh, man, these are so hard to pronounce. Salto, I think. The Cree.
Make fun of Greg if he doesn't Naxcopi get these names right.
And the Innu. The descriptions of the Wendigo do vary somewhat within the different tribes, but common to all these cultures is the view that the Wendigo is cannibalistic and supernatural. And they were strongly associated with winter, coldness, famine, and starvation. Because it's all things that it suffers from.
Yeah, for sure.
And Basile H. Johnston, in Ojibwe. I don't know if I'm pronouncing these right, and I'm going to feel terrible if I go and, like, see what it is. It is just completely wrong.
Yeah, if y'all listen to this podcast and get this far, even though we're boring and not funny, completely abuse Greg for this. He's making fun if he's doing the names wrong.
But Basile H. Johnston, he's a teacher and scholar from Ontario. Ontario.
Yeah, there we go.
Bro.
Ontario.
He told, like, a description of the Wendigo.
Did he claim to have seen it?
No. I didn't find anything like that. Interesting. But is...
I assume if he was putting the description out.
But it's also, like, from stories as well. That's he could have gotten the description. Because he is... part of the Algonquin speaking.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And he says the Wendigo was gaunt to the point of emaciation. It just has, like, really tightly pulled skin over its bones.
Oh, that's, so is it, like, malnourished?
It's, like, severely malnourished. Its complexion, the ash gray of death. So it's, like, skin is very, like,
just charred and, like,
it's not
gray.
Charred. It's, like, gray and, like, it's like, you know what a corpse looks like?
Yeah.
It's like that color.
Oh.
Its eyes are pushed back deep into their sockets, Wendigo looks like a gaunt skeleton recently disinterred from the grave. Its lips were tattered and bloody, so it, like, its lips are, like, torn up.
Interesting. I wonder if that has any correlation to, like, just the chapped lips of winter normally.
I don't think, bro, but...
Some people get really bad chapped lips.
I don't think this... It's like nah, it brother. Ate its own lips, not like oh, they chapped.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no.
No, that's... Jeez.
Yo,
I was just wondering. I don't even know. Whatever.
See someone with you see someone with chapped lips, bro? They might be a Wendigo. You got
probably
no,
true. Probably
no
true.
Idea.
Nolte. Nolte. I can't wait to bring him on the show.
Dude, he's going to be traumatized by us.
Y'all get to meet him shortly. He's a pretty hearty guy.
We love Nolte. Unclean and suffering from the separation of the flesh, the Wendigo gave off a strange and eerie odor of decay and decomposition, of death and corruption. So it just like smells bad.
I wonder if it just had like maggots crawling out of its like brain and stuff.
Nah, it's like it just looks like the Grim Reaper, but like worse.
The Grim Reaper, but like severely malnourished.
It's like, yeah, it looks tough.
Ah, jeez.
And there is in fact a satirical ceremonial dance that is sometimes performed during the times of famine to reinforce the seriousness of a Wendigo taboo.
Interesting.
I will not be saying the dude. I can't say the dance. You want to see it? Look at this thing. It's that.
Bro, that is like.
Dude, it's
that's a whole lot
so
of letters.
Long, and I honestly, it freaked me out. I didn't know what to do. Should I try it?
Yeah. Give it a go, Greg.
You're just going to bully me.
Maybe. Just maybe.
Wendigo Kanzimonwin.
Beautiful.
It was beautiful.
That was just like...
Flawless.
I mean, yeah. I can't even make fun of you for that. It was just perfect.
Yeah, I know, bro. and it was performed during times of famine and involved wearing masks and dancing backwards around a drum.
I wonder why backwards. That's weird.
Not
weird, but just interesting.
Yeah, actually, if you look up a lot of ceremonial dances by Native Americans, they're actually pretty cool to watch.
I mean, I'd imagine for sure, but I don't know. Just like backwards just kind of caught me off guard there. I don't know why.
Just backwards.
Just, I don't know.
But I don't have a Wendigo story, but I have a story of Wendigo psychosis.
All right, give it to me.
And this is just like a dude eating his family.
Oh my God.
So, a plains Cree trapper from Alberta named Swift Runner. So this is a Native American or an Indo-American. During the winter of 1878, Swift Runner and his family were starving and his eldest son died. 25 miles away from the emergency food supplies at Hudson Bay Company Post, Swift Runner butchered and ate his wife and 5 remaining children.
Swift Runner. Well, just had to add that.
You just had to. Given that he resorted to cannibalism so near to food
Food supplies?
Yes, food supplies.
There we go.
And that he killed and consumed the remains of all those present. It was revealed that Swift Runner's case was not of pure cannibalism as a last resort to avoid starvation, but rather a man with Wendigo psychosis.
That's terrifying.
He eventually confessed and was executed by authorities at Fort Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan?
Yes.
There we go. Nice.
Thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, essentially, he was really close. I accidentally turned away from my mic. He was really close to the food. What was it called?
Food supplies? Food
yeah,
reserves?
There was like a food supply, yeah.
Surplus store?
From the emergency food supplies at Hudson Bay Company Post. So, he was only 25 miles away, and his first son died. And he just ate his wife and 5 remaining children.
Yeah, I don't. That's weird.
So
to me.
It wasn't seen as like a last resort to cannibalism. That's why it's been classified as Wendigo psychosis.
It's kind of I don't know. I'd be interested to explore like the tipping point of like how his son dying just he immediately like resorted to just eating his family. Like if that.
I mean
obviously
people tend to break really easily when
it
comes to starvation.
Yeah,
which is an interesting thing, but cannibalism is definitely hard. Like. As a person,
when you
like
just
having
eat your
to
wife
do that,
and kids,
like that's just good. Because I remember there was a story of like a soccer team that like crashed in the airplane and they had to eat the dead passengers to survive.
Where was that? Because I feel like I've heard that story before.
I think it was somewhere in South America.
Yeah, I was.
It was like somewhere near the Chilean mountains.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that story before.
Where they crashed, they were in the snowy mountains and.
They weren't rescued for like a week or a week
rescued,
and a half, right?
No, it was longer. It was
like a month?
It was like 2 months.
Jeez, wow.
And they at first were just eating like the rations that were there and they ran out real fast because there was a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
And so then they tried eating like the plane seats and then they
get that nice juicy leather.
They started, yeah. And the thing is that a lot of that leather is like toxic because of how it's treated.
I'd imagine. And it, like the chemicals and dye in it and all that.
Yeah, so they had to resort to eating the actual other passengers that perished in the plane crash.
That's like sad.
Yeah, and when they actually were rescued, like everyone was like, oh my gosh, how did you survive? And then like the news came out, what happened? And they were like shunned for it. I mean, I wouldn't like shun them for it because like, you know, they did what they had to.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I don't know why people really shun them though. Cause like,
I don't really know how much
if they were eating alive people, then I'd be like, okay, that's tough.
Yes.
Don't do that. No, no. But like,
no, please don't.
no, please don't eat me. But they were like, the passengers were already dead. They had been like starving for days.
Yeah.
Almost. It was more like 2 weeks they were starving, and then they were like,
I don't know how, like, I'd like to think of myself as being like, I don't even know if I'd really judge them. Like, I kind of just feel like sad hearing that story for those guys having to do that because, you know, that was like
hard to do.
Yeah. It was most definitely a really traumatizing experience.
Would you do it, bro? If you had to?
I'm not going to die. Like, if I have the choice of eating my friends or dying,
I mean, if your friends are alive or if they're dead.
If they're dead, definitely.
If they're dead, okay. If they're alive, you're not going to be like full 2001 A Space Odyssey.
No. What we're going to do is we're going to...
The Monkey with the Bone. Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh. At the beginning, it's like a monkey just kills another monkey with a bone.
Interesting.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today.
Yeah.
So we'll see y'all next time. And I believe the next episode will be from Scotland, Britain, and that area, Ireland, maybe Wales.
Yeah, we'll UK. Yeah, for sure. We'll get out DL pretty shortly, so it'll be a fun episode.
All right. Well, that's all today. See ya.
See you guys.